Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today on Hercules and the Space Gods, we'll be meeting with Michael and Diane Duncan of the Sixth Revelation and focusing on the topic of celestial hierarchy. Greetings and welcome, Diane and Michael. How are you?
Greetings, Hercules. We're doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy birthday to both of you.
Yes.
A little belated, but still, how does it feel to be a year more on this planet?
Oh, well, it's actually, we're very hopeful. We're getting some really good news from our celestial friends, the space gods, in the context of the Sixth Revelation. So my birthday was October 28th, and Diane's was November 12th. So we're doing really well, and here Diane wants to say hi.
Well,
hi,
good
Diane.
Evening. Thank you so much for inviting us. We feel really honored. Thank you, Hercules.
And thank you for being here. I'm honored by your being here as well, and I'm really looking forward to discussing the celestial hierarchy. As you know, for quite a while now, I've been trying to help us build the Rosetta Stone. So that when everyone is talking about celestial communications, we could at least understand each other better and start speaking a universal language, because the systems are very different as described initially, but actually they connect quite well. And because your background is so vast, you're excellent folks to speak to about this topic.
Well, thank you so much, Hercules. We really appreciate that. We have, Diane, before Diane and I met in 1991, she, of course, was involved with, way, way back, she was involved with a wonderful gentleman, and she's going to tell you a little bit about him. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
Well, of course, Michael is talking about Mr. Blessing, William Blessing. He was born in 1900, and he was a Baptist minister, but he did leave the Baptist church and went on his own, and I was just a little girl. He was born in 1900, so I was very little, and he would send brochures to my parents every month, and then he'd come visit in California. He was a Colorado man, as I was, born in Colorado, and my parents, but we moved to California, and he'd come out and be with us, and he would go and do his beautiful lectures, and the auditoriums would be so filled, and I would go around and take his hat and do the collection of the donations. But I grew up with him. He would come out special occasions for my graduation from high school, and took me to Catalina Island with his family, and so he was wonderful. It was only much later I found out he'd written books about people on the inner earth and all of the outer space stories, and that came later when I got a little bit older. But my main thrust was my parents when we moved back to Colorado and went to Colorado Springs, because my parents got to know Mark L. Prophet and Elizabeth
yes.
Clare Prophet. And I was so thrilled because my mother was just in love with Elizabeth. She was so beautiful. And I have to tell you an interesting story.
Sure.
My first husband, who passed away from cancer, he and Elizabeth Clare were both born in New York within a few hours of each other.
Oh, wow.
She was born on April 8th, 1939, and he was born April 7th, just a few hours before she was, 1939. And they both, were in Colorado Springs together at that time, and then she moved out to California, and we had moved out to California, so I got to bring my whole family to be with her here. And, of course, then the unforeseen happened. She and my first husband both died at the same time. Well, it was just within a few weeks. My first husband died on August 14th, 2009, and Elizabeth, oh, we prayed for her, she died on October 15th, 2009. So that they both were born within a few hours of each other and died within just a few weeks. And lived a pure, wonderful life, and I still pray to Elizabeth and Mark. So that's kind of where I'm at to that point.
Elizabeth and Mark also, but mostly Elizabeth, had a very profound effect on theosophy, and moved it further along in the direction that it had started to go in with the I Am activity.
Yes.
The I Am activity, and then the Bridge to Freedom, and then Elizabeth Clare Prophet and Summit University, or the Summit Lighthouse. They moved the spirituality forward. And I'm glad you have that extensive background with the prophets, because we'll start with their celestial hierarchy, and I'm sure you're familiar with it, and then we'll draw parallels between that and other understandings of the celestial hierarchy, such as are in the Urantia book.
That sounds fantastic. And Hercules, of course, we know that this with the Ballards, the I Am movement with the Ballards,
yes.
And then the prophets carrying it on, we're calling a neo-theosophy,
yes.
But we also have some roots in the kind of the modern theosophical movement brought about by, of course, Helena Blavatsky and, you know, the Theosophical Society. We became members in the 1990s, and we worked under the president of the American section of the Theosophical movement, Grace Kanoke, and the Secretary General at that time was Kirby Van Matter, a wonderful gentleman, and we would visit them at the mansion in Altadena, California. We learned a lot about, Blavatskyan theosophy,
mm-hmm.
And then, of course, Diane had roots in, the prophets. And then, of course, around the mid-1990s, we became initiated and members of Maitreya Great Tao. We've heard about Maitreya in neo-theosophy and the Blavatskyan theosophy, especially with Annie Besant and others.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's theosophical background there, and of course, in a little bit later on, in like 2011, we became members of the Urantia Book movement and started really studying the Urantia Book. And Diane wanted to tell you a little bit more about the prophets.
Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to mention, too, that another interesting event. Of course, I got in with Grace Kanoke, and she was the president of the Western section of Theosophy, and she was a beautiful woman that really liked my family. My mother and Grace became very close, and in my albums that I have upstairs, I have many letters that Grace Kanoke wrote to my mother and to our family. But I would take my whole family, my children too, to see her, and we'd have lunch, and of course she was a vegetarian too. They had a cafeteria in the mansion, and it was just a few blocks away from Lake Street up there where we had the library and the meetings. So we would go to the mansion for lunch with Grace and Kirby, and then we'd go back over to the library and have the meetings at the with her and all of the crew. So I just wanted to mention one more thing, though.
Mm-hmm.
Helena Blavatsky. Now, she was born in 1831 in August, and she passed away at only 60, and that was in 1891. Well, I took my whole family up to Pasadena for the 100th anniversary of Blavatsky's death. And that happened to be in May. Well, on, well, we all gathered there, Grace and Kirby and all of us, but the interesting thing is I came home and we had the ceremony just a day or two before, because May 8th, 1991, that was the 100th anniversary of her death, that's when I met Michael.
And oh, wow.
I just felt that was so symbolic, that on the 100th anniversary of Blavatsky's death, see, we had the ceremony on a Sunday, so we had to have it, you know, a few days earlier. I met Michael on that Wednesday, which was the actual day of the 100th anniversary. And Michael and I just felt that that was something really, really important that bonded us with Helena Blavatsky.
She was a remarkable woman, and as part of my training, I was in one of the esoteric groups that she had started in New York City.
Oh, all right.
With the medium George Wehner. He was okay. Friends with Talbot Mundy, with Rudolph Valentino, with Natasha Rombova.
Okay.
You know, those are the people in his circle, and he wrote a book called The Curious Life. So I was involved in that particular adventure. And so a lot of my early training that wasn't from my growing up Greek and going to Greek parochial school was in the theosophy of Blavatsky. And I started speaking as a teenager, too, in public. And one of the places where I gave one of my first public speeches was the United Lodge of Theosophists. And
okay.
I believe it was in 77 or thereabouts. And my first public talk was on Hercules and the Zodiac.
That would be for you.
Yeah. So, yeah, I have a long history with when I first started the podcast, I invited the theosophical organizations to be on. And I wanted to do a theosophy show. We had one briefly with Ellen Maxson. She started out with a theosophist, and then she also was a part of Elizabeth Prophet's group as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, she was part of right. She was in Elizabeth's group. Yeah.
We talked to her.
Yeah, and we know that the Heart Center also, we have a friend, Linnell Griffin, and Charles Gafke, I believe his name is. We started to befriend them quite a bit. And, you know, I thought Diane wanted to take the phone because we were talking about the prophets.
Okay.
I thought she was going to tell about her experience with the Elizabeth Clare Prophet when she went to one of the lectures down in the San Diego area, and she was anointed. Before we move on, I just want her to just give a little brief summary of that experience, because I think it is so important to the sixth revelation work that we're doing now. Okay, hold on just a sec.
Well, actually, this had to do, Hercules, with Saint Germain. I went to a meeting in San Diego. I took my whole family again. They all loved to go, even my two boys, Dean and Don. And this was 1988. And we went down to San Diego to the Masonic Temple, and she was there. And she gave a lecture, a dictation on Saint Germain, and it was from Saint Germain. And we went down during the week of Valentine Day, Valentine time in February. And when I was there afterward, I went up to her, and she was kind of in a little platform, and there were stairs leading up to her. And I went up, and she put the green crystal upon my forehead. And it was a most wonderful experience. She had her cowboy boots on. I think I've told you she'd wear those and her cowboy hat. And she just looked so darling, you know, in her fringed buckskin coat and everything. But she did do that. And right there standing with her was Charles Fisher. Dennis. Dennis. Charles was there too, but Dennis Fisher is the one I wanted to talk about, because many, many years later, And it was only just a few years ago, just about, well, what, 3 years ago? Yeah, just 2 or 3 years ago, I went as an invitation with Lael from the Heart Center down to, it was kind of near Oceanside, his home, Vista, California. And we went down there, and lo and behold, Dennis Fisher was there. And we hadn't seen each other since that meeting in 1988 with Elizabeth Clare. He
wow.
had been on that platform with me at that time. And I just couldn't believe it. We hadn't seen each other since 1988. And he didn't exactly work for her as an employee. He was a volunteer of hers. And he was there. So we got back together again, and he has the most wonderful group of people that come to him every week. And it's part of the Heart Center. After Elizabeth Clare passed on, David Lewis took over the group of people that she had been the closest to, and that included Dennis Fisher. So we
yes.
got together again, and that was a really wonderful experience. We were able to talk of the stories about Elizabeth and just really have had a good conversation every once in a while on the phone, too, about her. So here's Michael.
Okay.
And I also wanted to mention something that was very interesting about that meeting with Dennis Fisher, was that at that time we were starting to get some inklings of the new worldwide religion of love.
Mm-hmm.
We were starting to get messages, of course, from Zeus and Hera, local universe father and local universe mother, that there would be some new programs for our Earth. And they introduced us to the beginnings of what they call the new worldwide religion of love, and the ones the celestial beings or the space gods that are bringing this particular program to the Earth and also to a couple other planets in the solar system
mm-hmm.
are none other than Sanat Kumara and Lady Master Venus. We call them Gabriel from the Urantia book. We've put two and two together. That Sanat Kumara is Gabriel in our Urantia book tale, our Urantia book information. He's the firstborn of Zeus and Hera, local universe father and mother. But we have made the connection that he's also Hephaestus in the Greek. He's the son of Zeus and Hera. He has a consort, and her name is Aphrodite. But also in this neo-theosophy, this Elizabeth Clare Prophet and Heart Center group, you know, they're considered ascended masters, Sanat Kumara and Lady Master Venus. And it's really amazing, Hercules. When we were invited to Dennis Fisher's house, we went in, and right above his fireplace are the most beautiful pictures of Sanat Kumara and Lady Master Venus,
oh,
Gabriel
wow.
and Aphrodite. And we even have pictures. We have pictures of myself and Diane and Linnell with Dennis in front of these two. And it was just like, because we had been hearing and learning about this new worldwide religion of love being brought about by, you know, Gabriel and Aphrodite. So it was just perfect synchrony there. And reminisced about their time with Elizabeth Clare Prophet, so it was really fantastic. And then, of course, we were introduced to Lord Maitreya, you know, in the mid '90s with Maitreya Great Tao, and we're hearing that Maitreya is instrumental right now in another program called the Magisterial Mission on Earth, beginning in March. March of 2017. So there's a lot going on with us and the space gods, Hercules, and we do have quite a vast background, as you say, with different organizations, and of course through you we are really making connections with with the Olympian pantheon and the Titans and pre-Titan, making lots of connections with the gods and the higher ones that we experience in the Urantia book, in Theosophy, so on and so forth.
Yes, a lot of very interesting mythical information has come from you that I've meditated upon and contemplated. And Gerald was on the show yesterday. We talked a little bit about that. That once it seems on the surface that things are contradictory in the information, but if you understand how what the information actually means, it's not contradictory at all. It's just different schemas for who's involved in different projects. Again, that's part of the curse of the Tower of Babel, the curse of tongues, you know, where people are talking about the same thing, but they don't know it. So that's part of what these focus on shows are all about. And in the theosophical or the neo-theosophical schema, both actually, they break down the celestial hierarchy and has many more layers than this. But a good place to start is the Elohim, because the Elohim are the lords of the rays, and they also are creator gods. So they're actually directly involved with the creation of form. So the world we inhabit, the bodies we inhabit, and a lot of our experience is the creation of the creators. And they've been called the lords, they've been called archons, they've been called the Balaam, they've been called all sorts of different names in different cultures, but they are the creator gods. And in theosophy, 7 or 14 or 12, depending on, again, how you count them, because each of the creators has a masculine and feminine polarity.
Right.
So you can count them as one being, or you can count them as two beings. And then some of the more powerful ones, luminaries, you can count them twice because they manifest powerfully in more than one polarity. So this gives you the standard Titanic pantheon of 14 gods or the Olympian pantheon of 12 gods. Now, are the creators described in the Urantia book or in Maitreya Great Tao?
Yes, of course. I just wanted to mention before, and I'm going to give Michael this question. The night of the special dictation by Saint Germain. In other words, this was the night that I really became close to an ascended master, and that was, of course, Saint Germain. He had given the dictation to Elizabeth on "Be my Valentine, be my love," and we were so taken with it, and everyone in the crowd, and it was full. I mean, there wasn't a seat taken that was empty, and everybody was crowded around. We had hundreds of people there. Everyone was just in a in ecstasy, listening to this dictation. But outside, after we left, we went outdoors, and the last thing of the dictation was, "Be my Valentine." We walked outside. We went to go to our car. I opened up the car door, and I stepped on something. And I've told so many people this, and probably you too, but I reached down to pick it up, and there was a solid gold locket.
Yes.
And the locket, yes. And the locket was inscribed on the front, "Be my Valentine."
That's beautiful.
And from then on, I'll tell you, Hercules, I was sold. I was I was there, and he was my man. I mean, I just read every book I could find on Saint Germain and how to create the cloud and how to do all these fun things, should we say. But I wanted to tell you that again because that was such a moment for us and for me especially. Number one, meeting, well, of course, Dennis Fisher was there, and Elizabeth putting the green crystal on my forehead personally from her, and then getting the locket from him, from Saint Germain. And those three things were really important, and then meeting Dennis later in all these years. So, Michael, I'll give that back to him about the creators, and he's here.
Thank you. And that's a lovely story, Diane. Thank you.
That was lovely. Yes, Hercules. Yes. So, Yeah, so ever since Diane and I have been together, we've been exploring many, many different modalities. But most recently, in 2013, it was that Diane was visited by Zeus, by the local universe father, and Hera. And that brought us to the sixth revelation and opening us up to all of these team meetings, these celestial team meetings we've been having in our home that we have published on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, Michael and Diane Duncan. And we've met with Lord Maitreya at least 37 times. He's given us messages. They are the space gods. And like you say, the Tower of Babel, referencing the Tower of Babel, the space gods are the space gods. No matter what time period you're in, no matter what name you give them, we're learning, though, that they evolve in their positions in,
yeah,
in the universe. They change jobs. They do lots of different things all the time. That's what we're learning. But as far as your question goes, I wanted to start maybe with Maitreya Great Tao. It's a folk religion. It's a folk tradition that really gained back some momentum in the 1930s with two masters, one called the sun, the male, and one called the moon, the female. They make it fairly simple for the laity. The masters, they have like masters, not, you know, like ascended masters, but actual people, masters that they train, who do ceremonies and they do initiations for the lay people to open up the third eye or the what they call the heavenly gate. For the laity, they make it fairly simple. It's like a theosophy. It's based in theosophy. They start with the circle and the dot in the middle of the circle.
Yeah.
The circle being the all, and you know the point, the first manifestation. But for the laity, they break it down in simple terms. They say there's God. There's the God. There is Laomu, which is the female god. She is the light, the single light on the altar, the Maitreya Great Tao altar. And then their worker, their handmaid, their messenger, their avatar, the one they send is Lord Maitreya.
Okay.
Hence Maitreya Great Tao. So Maitreya works with God, works with Laomu, the mother god, to go to a planet and to make substantial boots-on-the-ground changes. So it's kind of like he ushers in like an age of Aquarius. It's an age of brotherhood. It's an age of enlightenment. It's an upstepping, distribution of goods so people have enough to eat and people are loved. You know, he prepares a paradise on that planet. And the people in Maitreya Great Tao, the disciples, the laity, the masters, they all work together to enlighten souls and to try and prepare the ground for Lord Maitreya's work. So that's Maitreya Great Tao. And of course, like I said, in 2011, we got into the Urantia book and the Urantia book community, and it's a little bit more complex with the Urantia book. There is part one. In part one of the Urantia book, there are four parts, published in 1955. In part one of the Urantia book, we meet the gods of the central and super universes. Central universe being Paradise and Havona, and all of finite reality is manifested as seven super universes. So we've got the Universal Father, the Eternal Son, the Infinite Spirit, central universe rulers. We've got the Ancients of Days and others as super universe rulers. And then we get to the local universe, which is, you know, which is kind of a stepped down version of paradise. The local universe gods we encounter in part two. mm-hmm. those would be like, well, actually, the super universe and central universe rulers would be like your titans, would be like Zeus and Hera. It would be Cronus and Rhea. It would be Oceanus, Tethys. You'd have the Olympians. And also, actually, Hercules, just to back up a tiny bit, or a lot, there's the concept. There's the concept of the I am, or the all,
yes,
you know, that occurs before the Titans and so on and so forth, before the central universe rulers, the I am. So then we have the I am. It breaks up into this trinity, this first trinity, or the super universe rulers, then on down to the local universe rulers, which would be akin to Zeus and Hera, Poseidon and Uriel and Hades and all those gods. And then in part three we encounter the lesser gods, so to speak, in their relationship to our planet, which they call in the book Urantia.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the name the Urantia book. And here we get gods that, that create our bodies in laboratories, so to speak, celestial laboratories. We get Adams and Eves. We get archangels. We get seraphim. We get cherubim, so on and so forth. All of these beneficent gods, these celestials, that help us. So that's kind of how the hierarchy is broken down. In the Urantia book, and we think it's kind of like we've done a number of papers and written a bunch of letters to our friends in Urantia book community people, our friends, that we feel the Urantia book was modeled after the Greek pantheon,
mm-hmm.
and the hierarchies of families. And you've helped us to bring that to light.
Glad to be of assistance, and you've done an excellent job with it. So they have the archangels, because that's the next order. Beyond the Elohim, there is the angelic hierarchies, which are the archangels and the angels. And then, again, these aren't like as fixed as people would like. Sometimes the devas are placed with the angelic kingdom, and there's angelic devas. Sometimes they're placed with the Elohim because they're creators. So, again, we categorize them in different ways. But does the Urantia book have the angels as a separate order of creation, or is it like it is in the ancient Greek, a job title?
Well... gosh, I guess that depends on how the local universe rulers deal with them, and I would probably imagine that it would be maybe a combination of the two, depending upon maybe what job they're to do, or what status they are overall at that time, you know what I mean?
I believe so. In the more ancient records, again, angels are, there are certain types of beings that aren't human that are described, but the term angel itself, angelos or malak in Hebrew, it denotes a messenger. So it's the same thing with the Elohim. Elohim means Lord. So it's the same way we say Lord, and a Lord can be a terrestrial Lord or a celestial Lord or somebody in between. A messenger, too, could be anybody. So anybody who takes a message from a higher power to a lower power and vice versa is by definition, according to the Greeks of antiquity, an angel. And
sure,
it's only later on that the different celestial hierarchies became equated with the word angel. And later on in the magical text, where they became associated with planets and directions and seasons and things like that. That all came out a little later.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, there are different classes of angels and different types of angels that do different things on planets. Local systems, local universe. Yes, there are messenger angels. Yeah, there are messenger angels. There are recording angels. There are angels who help us to have fun. They call them, you know, diversion directors and things of that sort. All kinds of different celestials that perform functions. But there are also the helper angels, you know, the seraphim. Like supposedly, according to the Urantia book in just general terms, you know, each person has two or more seraphim that accompany them throughout their lives, like guardian angels and cherubim and what are called thanabim that will have personal charge over individuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I wanted to mention too, because you know we were talking about Elizabeth Clare and Mark Prophet regarding ascended masters, the ascended master tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, with Blavatsky, they were called Mahatmas.
Yeah.
She had her ascended masters, and then later, Leadbetter, Charles Leadbetter, and Annie Besant came along, and the term or the concept kind of evolved to be called ascended masters. It's funny because when you look in the Urantia book at some of the planetary rulers, like specifically our planet of Urantia, there's a group called the 4 and 20 counselors. There are 24 counselors that, they've been here. Oh, they've been to our home, Diane is saying, yes. They've been to our home. We've met with them, along with others, you know, other celestials. But these 4 and 20 counselors have been on the earth in, you know, human bodies, have been incarnated.
Mm-hmm.
So in some ways you could call them ascended masters. That would be like Adam and Eve, Enoch, and others. I don't have the full list in front of me, but I mean you could consider these you could consider them ascended masters because they've gone through a good portion of the ascension scheme on the earth. So these 4 and 20 counselors, they've had the earth experience, and they oversee a lot of the functions, a lot of the goings on the earth. And we have the angels, and as a matter of fact, according to the Urantia book, currently, as of 1955, there is an archangel's headquarters for the earth. So a group of archangels having a location near our earth, or maybe on our earth, to oversee archangel activity on earth. So there's a lot going on with our Earth that people aren't necessarily aware of, you know, especially during these turbulent times. They say, "Oh my gosh, you know, where is God? Where is God? What's happening?" You know, but they're there and they're with us and they're always working on many levels. We've got 4 and 20 counselors. We've got archangels, cherubim, sanabim. The seraphim are helping us personally, lesser gods, major gods, you know, so it's teeming out there with beneficial gods, Hercules, as you know, different names, different times.
Yes. I know, because I've been given different names for the Elohim. I mean, I've studied enough, and I've studied the medieval texts also to talk about the planetary spirits, and so I can identify them, you know, even if I didn't know who it was behind the mask, just by their functions and certain other information. But it does get very confusing. So I use the ancient classical mythological names for the planetary powers, and I found that it works better for me because of my background, and also in teaching this to other people, they're already familiar with Greek mythology through our popular culture. So it's easy for them to begin to understand the planetary rulers and the planetary spirits. I will be in January, which is right around the corner, rearranging things a bit. Like when we first started, we were doing the Elysium Project with our conversations with people who had different beliefs. And ironically, when I was reviewing the Unarius text, guess who I encountered being in charge of Elysium projects?
Can you give us a hint?
Maitreya.
the celestial. Oh, I thought you were talking about a person. Oh, Maitreya.
Yeah, no.
Yes,
Maitreya.
Sure.
And also in my Atlantean work, I've done a lot of Atlantean things over the years. We even had an event, Mythic Atlantis, and we had the Atlantean Outpost, and we had all sorts of Atlantean things, and they're part of the spirituality that right now is sitting on a shelf because of all the other things that need attention. But in the Unarian text too, guess who I encountered in the part of Atlantis that I resonate most with? Maitreya. So Maitreya is a very busy celestial. And so in addition to the Elohim, the creators and the angels and the angelic hierarchies, which again, we've both stated that these are flexible, the names and these categories are very flexible. We have what you guys brought up with the ascended masters and the ascended beings in Theosophy. They have leaders called Chohans. And you're right, they do cycle through these different jobs and the different titles in different ways. Then you have the ascended working in the departments of these Chohans for different purposes. And the older Blavatsky and Theosophical texts make it clear that the rays have no color. But in Neo-Theosophy, they've assigned colors to all the rays. And again, that conveys information rather than being the actual color of the ray, because the rays are, you know, beyond color. They make use of colors, and what colors a group is using tells you a lot more about the group than about the celestial rays.
Yeah. Yeah, and Diana and I were just discussing the other day that, you know, the Urantia book has so much in common with so many traditions. You know, I've written a paper called the Urantia Book in the New Age, and I see the Urantia Book as a New Age document, because you have as one of the main themes, you have the attempted harmonization of science, philosophy, and religion.
Mm-hmm.
You have a hierarchy of beneficial celestials helping, you know, helping people. And there are a lot of concepts. There are a lot of concepts, ancient Oriental concepts found in the Urantia book. For example, we're talking about the seven rays.
Mm-hmm.
And we see the seven super universes in the Urantia book as, you know, the seven main divisions of this grand universe. And each one of these, and you can read this in the Urantia book, each one of these super universes has a specific, what would you say, expression, or they don't have colors in the actual book, but they have, each super universe is dedicated to the development of a different attribute. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just like with each particular ray of the seven rays of the Neo-Theosophy has, you know, is geared toward the development of a particular aspect so that we become whole and unified, you know, balance the threefold flame, of course, with Elizabeth Clare. But there are also so many amazing things, like Hercules. One of the main concepts that they drive home as far as our individual development in the Urantia book is the same as Theosophy. It's that we have an animal nature that is competing with our spiritual nature.
Mm-hmm.
The animal nature wants to draw us down. The spiritual nature wants to, you know, lift us up toward unification, reunification with God. Also, we have what we call the seven psychic circles in the Arantia book. You progress through each circle from the seventh to the first, and of course, that and many in the Arantia book community have said, "Oh, the seven chakras, of course." You know, we go through the develop through our seventh chakra till we reach the crown chakra. And one of the amazing things is when you get into the paradise idea, the paradise concept in the Arantia book, that what they call paradise respiration. There is an inbeat of the paradise heart and an outbeat of the paradise heart. And, of course, that hearkens to the days and nights of Brahma in theosophy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you could go on and on. I mean, we have a septenary nature. A septenary nature in theosophy. And we have three higher attributes according to theosophy. We have manas, which is mind. We have buddhi, which is kind of like the soul. And we have atman, which is akin to, in the Arantia book, the individual personality of the Father within each individual, you know, like the primordial spark. So in the Arantia book, there is a concept through that is expressed through Zeus and Hera, local universe Father and Mother, called the seven adjutant mind spirits. There are five lower, and there are two higher. And if you read in theosophy, basic theosophy, you have lower manas and you have higher manas.
Higher manas.
So there in the Arantia book, we also have lower manas and we have higher manas, that being of the higher mind and the lower animal mind. And of course, like I said, buddhi, you evolve from this finite earth level or basic level, human level, finite level, to the Marantia level, where the local universe is, where the local universe Father and Mother are. That's called Marantia development, or the Marantia level, buddhi. And then, of course, when you reach spirit levels, when you're approaching Havona and Paradise, then you're plugging into the Atman of theosophy. You're plugging into the real getting in touch with or experience with the immortal spark, that Atman, or what they call in your Arantia book, the individual personality spark of God.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great. We can talk about all these wonderful things, you know, with these different terms. But it's all so enlightening, Hercules, and it's such a great study that we're so excited too, you know.
Yeah, me too. It is important, especially if you're going to study the esoteric sciences, to know that these exist, because taken of them on their own, without the explanation, without the insights of other systems, it's easy to get yourself stuck in an intellectual trap,
mm-hmm. Sure.
Where you're not actually seeing or experiencing directly. You've created a ladder in your mind, and although the ladder will take you to point A to point B and then all the points in between, the ladder is a construct. So it's a tool. It's not a crutch. This is fascinating stuff. And thank you for bringing all that up. And humanity, too, can climb from, like, we're humans. We can become ascended masters. We become Chohans. We can enter the Devic and the elemental kingdom. So that's something controversial and that a lot of people don't speak about. But if you've been in the esoteric arts for a long time, you know that it's true that people from different elemental kingdoms and the anima and the animus of nature do incarnate in human form for longer or shorter periods of time. So humanity becomes a wondrous schoolroom and a way of expressing yourself.
Yeah, and I want to say, before I hand it over really quick, I wanted to say that the Urantia book has an ascension scheme, and that's one of our main purposes, is to ascend. And we can ascend to all these different levels, like I said, the Urantia level, the spirit level, but we can also become finaliters, according to the Urantia book, where we're embraced by the Father and the Mother, and then we go back down to different levels and different spheres, and we help out the humanities of those spheres, kind of like ascended masters. There's one other thing I wanted to mention, though. Before I have Diane talk about what she wanted to mention, one thing here, that we really feel, Hercules, based on all of our study, based on the celestial team meetings we're having and all we're learning, that the Greek approach, the Olympian hierarchy, is the best. Because during those golden ages, the Greeks were in touch. They were intimately involved every second of their lives with the gods. They were talking with the gods. They were experiencing the gods. They were living their lives in harmony with the gods. And we feel that that's what we need to get back to. So the Greek is, theosophy, the neo-theosophy, all of these wonderful traditions, but the Greek is a practical guide to getting us there. Yeah.
I have to agree. Yes.
I just wanted to thank you for bringing that to us, because that just opened up our whole world. Because it makes it so easy for us to really hone in on what the gods are saying when we know exactly who we're talking about, and doing it with a Greek name. And, Michael and I have studied these books, and we have hundreds of books that we look at and everything, but I wanted to bring out this point that I think you were starting to touch on. My whole world changed in 2013. When Zeus actually came to my home in my bedroom upstairs and actually took me to Wadsworth Mansion, where he was, and to see him and Hera there laughing and talking with each other and with the other gods and angels that were with them, and then for him to beckon to me to come over to him and go to the window, and he talked to me about how they lived and so forth. This is the part that we forget sometimes. We're studying and we're a scholar, and that's wonderful, but my whole life changed when I found I could actually talk to him and he would talk to me.
Right.
And then the world changed. And so now when I'm reading these books, I go to him to ask questions even before I'll go to a book. Or if I go to a book, then I'll go to him and ask him, what about this, and how does this relate, and so forth. I'm trying to say that is the step that we really need to get to. Even though the books are important, we need to talk to them. It was two young ladies, two celestials. It was Hestia and Diana. That mm-hmm. was their Greek names, but we weren't told those names at first. At first, we were told they were Della and Corinth. And they arranged a big meeting for us with their friends, they said. And we came in the room, and we had all the chairs. We had about 20 chairs up in the upstairs great room. And Hestia and Diana were at the front, in front of us, at the top of the room. And they introduced all of these celestials to us. Well, they gave us their names like Della and Corinth. They gave us, in other words, Aaron, their personal names for us. Aaron was actually, we found out, was Apollo. And so forth. But we were told at that meeting, and we didn't know anybody, any of them, so it was really tough to even do the meeting. But I could tell Aaron had on a bright red robe, and Hestia was dressed in blue. And, you know, I could tell all of this part, but I didn't know who they were. And we asked them during the meeting, well, why have you come, and what is this all about? And they said, these are all celestial musicians. We all sing, we all play an instrument, not all, but Aaron is an organist. Hestia is a singer and a pianist. They all sing and they're all musicians. And they said, you are musicians and we are musicians and we want to get to know you and you to know us. And we want to help you with your music and with your art. It's like Melody was introduced to us as Melody. Now we know her name is Persephone. She is an artist that combines light pictures with music. And she wants to teach Michael how to do that. So I want to get beyond the books and beyond the scholarly study and introduce this new way of dealing with them. Actually talking with them. Start talking to them. Even if you don't think it will ever happen that they'll talk back, try it. This is the step that we need to take. We need to actually be in their company. So
Thank you. As it was in days of old when people
exactly in the golden ages. Here's Michael.
Yeah, that's right. In the golden ages. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's what we're working on, a new golden age.
That's right, the new golden age for humanity, uh-huh. Hercules. We see, like I said at the beginning of the phone call, excuse me, at the beginning of the call, we're hearing really hopeful messages from them. We're getting really great, great hopeful messages that, you know, we're in store for a new golden age to come. 2023, we'll get a taste, a foretaste of the Aquarian Age, which will be a step for, well, Pluto will be in Aquarius for a few months. We'll get a foretaste of that Age of Aquarius to come, and that will last for, for a little less than a year, I guess. And then 2024 will be squarely in the Aquarian Age. And that's like what I said with Maitreya Great Tao. That's when Lord Maitreya really does his stuff and makes this world into a paradise. And then the Piscean Age will be coming 2043. And this will be the beginnings of the Age of Light and Life when Lord Maitreya and Zeus and Hera will be transforming this planet into a wonderful place. We'll just leave it at that, a wonderful place.
I know, we only have a couple of minutes left, and I want you guys to be continued. Our conversations are always to be continued. And
you
if
bet.
You could share how people can find your music and find your YouTube shows and contact you, that would be awesome.
That sounds great, Hercules. And hey, once again, thank you so much for this opportunity, Hercules, to help us reintroduce and help us all revisit the Olympian space gods. So
my honor and my pleasure.
All right. So yes, we have over 100 videos now on our YouTube channel. It's Michael and Diane Duncan. That's with two N's, with Diane. Michael and Diane Duncan. We've got our celestial team meetings. We've got a lot of our songs. We've got artwork. We've got Maitreya messages there. And Duncan is D-U-N-K-I-N. And then if you wanted to contact us personally, it's Michael Duncan, D-U-N-K-I-N, the number one, at hotmail.com. And if you search on iTunes and Amazon, you'll get our 5 albums, also Spotify. You just type in Michael Duncan or Reverend Michael Duncan, and you'll get to our downloads and, you know, to the streaming. But, you know, if you want to contact us personally, we'll send you a free CD, a free CD copy of any of our albums, any of our songs.
thank you very much. You're both incredibly awesome. And I enjoyed tonight and look forward to our next.
That sounds great, Hercules. We're looking forward to it, too.
Okay, be well, and thanks for being here today. Thanks to everybody tuned in, whether you called and you're in our queue, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures, and we will close with Michael's God Bless the World.
Fantastic. God bless
Thank
you.
God bless you too. Take care. God bless the world. 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 God bless.